Well, if I seem like I've been shot out of a cannon today, if I seem like I consumed about 3 gallons of Red Bull right before the service, it's because I love the topic. I love the topic of what I want to visit with you about today, of what the Apostle Paul tells us through his letter to the Ephesians. Now, for several weeks, we've been talking about trading up. The Apostle Paul wrote a letter to a church that he had started. The church was struggling, and he sent them some words. And in the words to the Ephesians, Paul says, look, you don't have to stay where you are, not in your life. You do not have to be stuck. You don't have to stay where you are, that you inherited the power of Christ. When you gave your life to Christ, you inherited not just the power of Christ, but you inherited the grace of Christ, and you inherited the initiative of Christ to claim control of the agenda for your life. And that you, not your circumstances, not your conditions, but that you, responsible ultimately, and I am responsible ultimately for our own shortcomings. And then we have far more power in our life to do something about where we are in life. And so Paul writes this to this church in Ephesus. He says you can trade up, and he likens it to a set of clothes. He says you can take off the old clothes and replace it with new clothes. And you can take the word clothes and swap that out for the word habit. Right? You can take your old habits and you can swap them out for new habits, that we are the sum total of our habits. We are today the result of the decisions that we made yesterday. And tomorrow we will be the results of the decisions that we make today. Paul says you have plenty of initiative in how those choices and habits play out. You can do something about your life. And we looked at the first week of trading up a life of reactivity for a life of proactivity, and to claim the truth that Paul gives us. And last week, we talked about trading up this insatiable quest for popularity for this thing called purpose. And that when we find our purpose, it diminishes our distractions of living the kind of life God wants us to live. And not only does it diminish distractions, but when we latch on to our purpose, it is purpose that pushes us through the pain of life. And so Paul, in a very orderly fashion, gives the Ephesians a list of things they can do to trade up for a better way of living. And I want to talk to you today about a very, very simple truth. But it is a small truth that has the potential to have an enormous impact on your life. And I believe that some of you here today, some of you listening online, some of you will decide to claim this truth for your life. And I absolutely believe that some of you will claim this truth so that one day you will look back and say, you know what, when I decided to do that, it changed my life. And here's the that. If you want to change the life that you have, you have to change the words that you speak. If you want to change the life that you have, according to Paul, you have to change the words that you speak. See, I think if I want to change my life, then I got to change my career or my income level or my body. And if I want to change my life, I should change my relationships or maybe my geography. Maybe we should move. Maybe that would be the solution to a better life. Yet Paul, in this letter, says, no, if you want to change your life, the life that you have, you got to change the words that you speak. And so staying in that fourth chapter of Ephesians, listen to what the 29th verse says. Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouth, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. If you want to change the life that you have to change the words that you speak. Now, this is a challenge. This is a challenge in our world because we live in a world that loves the language of discouragement. And Paul says, don't let unwholesome talk come out of your mouth, only trade up for words that encourage. But we don't live in a world that affirms encouragement. We live in a world that seems to validate discouragement. We're cynical. Think how cynical we've become. Think how negative we've become, how critical we've become. It is like nobody has anything kind to say about anybody. And if you don't agree with somebody, it's really impossible to find something encouraging to say about them or to them. It is so easy to go to bed at night, having concluded an otherwise normal day, and to feel discouraged. It starts with our children, right? We send our kids to school in the language of discouragement, sometimes overt, sometimes covert, but our kids, they don't make the right team. They may not make the team at all. They're not in the advanced class. They're a little bit different, so they feel alone. And with social media, it is now easier than it ever has been in the history of the world to criticize and to insult someone. I can't imagine what it'd be like to be 14 years old today. And when I was 14, you just had to feel unpopular, right? It was a feeling. You didn't know if it was true or not. You just felt unpopular. No, no. Today, there's hard data to affirm if you are unpopular. Social media has made that possible. And so we go to bed discouraged. Our children are discouraged. It's the same in adult life. You have a project at work. It's a great project, but your boss wants to just point out all the flaws and all the things that you didn't do. We're fluent in the language of discouragement, even when we don't know it. I think about the number of spouses who are so fluent in the language of criticism, in the language of cynicism, in the language of judgment. It's become so negative and so toxic, so few words of encouragement. At tax time in the spring, the worst thing that could happen to any of us from a tax standpoint is to what? To be audited. We don't want to audit. We don't want to get that letter that says we're going to audit you. Can you imagine if somebody did a word audit in your life or mine? Somebody just followed us around with a little notepad and a pen, and every time we said a word, they wrote it down and they cataloged it all. How many of those words would be words of criticism, words of judgment, words of negativity, and how many of those words would be positive? We don't live in a world that validates encouragement. Think about this culturally, right? The negative gossip industry in the tabloid business is a $3 billion a year industry. We will pay to read about the discouragement of others. Adweek magazines, I oversaw this week. This is an amazing bit of research. Adweek magazine says that negative superlatives in advertising are 30% better at getting your attention than positive superlatives. And the average click rate, this is amazing to me, the average click-through rate on a headline with a negative superlative. You're watching the internet, you see something up there, the average click-through rate on a negative superlative is 64% higher than a positive counterpart. Somebody cures cancer? Yeah, we don't care. Oh, they had an affair. Let's click through that. I need to know, I need to read about that, right? We click through 64% faster for negative headlines. It is incredibly easy to feel discouraged. And yet Paul, in this brilliant letter, tells the church in Ephesus one of the most spiritual things that you and I can do. One of the most spiritual things that we can do is to build other people up by encouraging them. That God has called us. God, Paul says, called the church in Ephesus to encourage people, to be a voice of hope and a voice of positivity instead of constantly tearing them down. And Paul believed this, and he wrote this, I think, because he knew what the scriptures tell us. We believe in an encouraging God. And that's where it starts. And some of us don't know that. Some of us have forgotten that. Some of you grew up in a church where the opposite was true. And God was only present to point out your flaws and to condemn you and to discourage you based on everything that you've done in your life. And Paul comes along and says, no, 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 no. Our God is an encouraging God. He wrote a letter to a church in Corinth. And in 2 Corinthians 7, verse 5, if you're taking notes, Paul says this, when we arrived in Macedonia, and he was starting churches all over the Near and the Mideast, he was launching one in Macedonia, and he says, when we got there, there was no rest for us. We face conflict from every direction, with battles on the outside and fear on the inside. I love that, because how many of your lives are like that right now? There's battles on the outside and there's fear on the inside. There's battles at work and there's battles at home and there's battles with the kid and there's battles with money and there's battles with health and there's battles with insurance. And inside, there's fear. And Paul says, that's the way it was when we got to Macedonia. There were battles everywhere on the outside and fear on the inside. But listen to this, verse 6, but God. I just circle that. Anytime you see something in the scriptures, it's negative, and then it's followed by the words, but God. Life is hard. but God. We had battles on the outside, fear on the inside, but God. And I can't wait to see what he says next. But God, who encourages those who are discouraged, encouraged us by the arrival of Titus. Paul says, our God is an encouraging God. It is the core of who God is. God longs to encourage the discouraged. So I just want to take a minute to share with any of you that walked in here today, any of you that walked in here today, and you've got battles on the outside, and you've got fear on the inside, and you're hurting relationally, and you're hurting financially, and you're hurting with your health, and you're hurting professionally, and you're hurting spiritually, and you feel discouraged, you serve a God who longs to encourage you. That's the nature of our God. And how did he do it? He encouraged the discouraged by sending someone who cared. He sent to Paul a man named Titus to encourage him, to lift him up and say, I know you got battles on the outside and fear on the inside, but you're gonna make it. Paul, you're one heck of a church planner. You gotta stay with it. You're a child of God. And look at all the success that you had yesterday. Stay with it, don't quit. And I know you're tired, but God is with you. That's how God tends to encourage us. He sends people into our lives to speak not unwholesome talk, but words that build up. He asked the Ephesians then to trade up, get rid of the words that tear down and trade up for the words that build up. If you want to change the life that you have, you gotta change the words that you speak. And so Paul himself, having experienced this, knowing when he was shot, when he thought he couldn't go on, what caused him to go on was encouragement through a guy named Titus. And so Paul now says, well, I need to do the same. And so he writes to his church in Ephesus and says, I know that you're down, but if you want to change your life, change your words. Don't let unwholesome talk come out of your mouth, but only words that build one another up. This is the hinge on which your capacity to change will swing. Our God is an encouraging God. If we're called to emulate our God, then we ought to be encouragers. And our words have power. I wonder why Paul spends so much time talking about the power of words. And the only answer I could come up with is our words have incredible power. Proverbs 18:21, Solomon, the wisest person who's ever lived, says this, the tongue, listen to this, the tongue has the power of life and death. Now, that's quite a statement, right? Not that the tongue and your words have power to motivate or inspirate or make somebody cry. No, no. The tongue has the power of life and death. Only God has the power of life and death. And yet Solomon says, and so do your words. That's how powerful they are. That is an amazing statement. And show me a marriage that is full of life, and I will show you a marriage that is full of life-giving words. Show me a marriage that is crummy, and I will show you a word audit that is full of life-taking words. Show me a work environment where you hate your boss, and I will show you an environment that has limited fluency in life-giving words. Words matter. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And the moment God decided to create the world, he did so by what? The spoken word. He spoke it into existence. In the Old Testament, Ezekiel in the valley of dry and dead bones says, you want the bones to have life? Prophesy to the bones. Don't just pick them up and glue them together. Speak to them. It's in the power of your words that gives them new life. Jesus said, if you want to move the mountain, say to the mountain. Talk to it. You want to change the life that you have, you change the words that you speak. There is power in our words. If you give something that much power, the opposite's true as well. That's why Paul starts off this exhortation with a warning. Trade up, eliminate words that tear down. Enormous power to tear down. I liken it to this. Do you know that one quart of oil, a single quart of oil can contaminate up to 250,000 gallons of drinking water? A single quart of oil can cause an oil spill and slick that spreads more than 2 acres in size. Our words are like that. They either give life or they take life. And they are far-reaching. And many of you grew up and you're still suffering from life-taking words. And somebody criticized you at the wrong time. And it just seared on your heart. And you're haunted by something a coach said or a preacher said or a Sunday school teacher said or a parent said or a grandparent said. And it's heavy on you because words matter. Some of you still wrestle each and every day with the pain of words. The opposite's true as well. Some of you are who you are because of the words that somebody spoke to you. Somebody encouraged you and said, no, you can do this. Somebody said, no, when you do that, it's phenomenal. I've never seen anybody reach people the way you reach. I've never seen anybody as creative as you. I've never seen anybody as good as numbers with you. Wow, you were amazing. You look so beautiful today. Your spirit is so bright. And somebody spoke into you life-giving words, and it changed your life. For me, I was probably Coach McDowell in the fifth grade. Coach McDowell in the fifth grade, I was so insecure. I speak now for a living. I wish you could have seen me in the fifth grade. You know, surfer white hair, gigantic cowlick hair, and about 4 more in the back. I was absolutely terrified of you people. Right? I didn't want to talk to a girl. I didn't want to talk to other guys. I didn't feel good athletically. I didn't feel good intellectually. I was clumsy. I wanted to sit by myself. And one day in basketball practice, Coach McDowell was working with the girls' team at the other end of the court. Fifth grade girl, right? Nothing more intimidating than the fifth grade girl. Coach said, hey, Rasmussen, come down here for a minute. He said, demonstrate for them a defensive slide. And so I did. He said, Rasmussen was the best defensive player we had last year. Now, I didn't know you could be the best defensive player on the team and sit on the bench every game. It never occurred to me that I could be the best because I didn't play. But when Coach McDowell said that, I thought, you know what? If he says it, I believe it. And I remember it like it was yesterday. I remember Miss Bangham in the seventh grade writing on one of my test papers, Paul is really smart. I thought, I am. I thought I was an idiot, truly. I thought I was dumb. But no. And the test scores, that didn't matter. But when Miss Mangum said it, maybe I can handle this thing called school. It is amazing. You look back on your life, those moments that seem so insignificant at the time, but they make such an enormous difference in your life. Our words matter. They come weighted with 1,000 pounds. Now I have this friend named Blanche. Blanche is a member of our church. She attends our Munger Place campus. Blanche is 94. Blanche and I get together periodically. We have lunch. And I went to my office a couple weeks ago, and there's one of those pink slips where somebody's called you. And my sister had written, she said, Blanche called. Please call her back. And when you call, she's going to refuse to answer. That's what the note said. And I thought, oh, you know, what have I done to make Blanche mad? And so I'll call her, and I called her, and she didn't answer, so I hung up and called again. She didn't answer, hung up, called again. And I thought, well, I got to figure out why Blanche is so mad. And finally, she picked up the phone. She said, I told your secretary to tell you that I was going to refuse to answer. And I said, well, why? She said, I need you to leave me a message. And I said, well, why? She said, do you remember when you called me 5 years ago? 5 years ago, you left a message on my voice machine. That's what she calls it, my voice machine. She said, and quote, you said, hello, sweet lady. You can go to jail for that today. I understand. Right? She said, hello, sweet lady. How you doing? I'm just calling to check in. You're the best. I love you. Pastor Paul. She said, I have listened to that voicemail to start my day every morning for 5 years. And last week, I pushed the wrong button and I accidentally erased it. And I just want you to call and leave me a message so I can hear your encouragement when I start the day. At no time did I think a single message on a voice machine would matter to anybody. This is the truth that Paul is claiming. This is what Paul is telling the church in Ephesus. You got to get this right. If you want to change the life you have to change the words that you speak. And so there's some rules about our words. We're going to make them rules. We're going to trade up, right? We're going to trade up our habits with our words for some better habits. And the first habit is, if you can't say anything helpful, skip it. Your mama was right, right? Didn't she teach you that? If you can't say something nice, don't say it at all. She was right. She stole that from the Apostle Paul. Let no unwholesome words come out of your mouth. The King James Version is shut thy trap, right? That's the Greek. I feel like that's the Greek. You put a governor on yourself and you say, I'm about to say something that is critical. I'm not going to say it. I'm about to light it. No, oh. I'm not going to say it. If you can't say something that lifts them up, skip it. Don't say it. I'm telling you, some of you, if you would embrace this one truth, I'm not even asking you to compliment them. I'm just saying stop it with the criticism. Some of you, if you would embrace this one truth, this would change your marriage. If you would just stop it with unwholesome speech. Some of you, this would change the relationship with your children. If you would just examine yourself before you speak. And if it's unwholesome, skip it. The second rule of our words and encouragement, if you see something, say something. Right? New York City, after 9/11, came up with a very compelling and effective campaign. It had to do with fighting terrorism. If you see something, say something. The point is, your observations mean nothing unless you tell somebody. It is the same with encouragement. If you see somebody do something complimentary, don't hoard it. Your observation means nothing. You have to set it free by saying it. You look beautiful today. You're so smart. When you say that, I feel good. You've worked so hard on that project. I've never seen anybody be as creative as you. If you see something, say it. Don't sit on it. Don't deny somebody the blessing of building them up. Every time you see something favorable, say it, text it, write it, shout it, whisper it, but make it a rule. Make it a rule in your life. When you see something positive with the people around you, stop them in their tracks and tell them. It is life-changing for both them and for you. Rule number three, talk to yourself. Talk to yourself. You see something, say something. If it's gonna be negative, skip it. And learn to talk to yourself. Sometimes we have to encourage ourselves. Sometimes we are the only voice in our head. And we all have those voices in our head, right? And so often those voices are equally, if not more discouraging than the voices around us. Well, I'm not good enough. Well, I never can. Well, I never will. Well, I always. Well, this sermon is no good. They're not gonna like the material. I don't know if I can. We have these voices in our head. You have to talk, say it to yourself. You have to encourage yourself. This is not narcissistic, this is healthy. 1 Samuel 36, and David was greatly distressed, for the people spoke of stoning him. But David encouraged himself in the Lord. every now and then, we have to encourage ourselves. My God is an encourager. I have to remind myself of that. My God is an encourager. You got to get your preach on with yourself, and you got to talk to yourself, right? My God will supply my needs. My God does love me. My God has forgiven me. If God is for me, then who is against me? I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. I am an overcomer. You begin to say these things to yourself over and over and over. If you want to change the life you have, change the words you speak, not just to other people, but to yourself. Make it a habit. Make it a rule. You know what I do sometimes? I leave myself voicemails. Myself. I call my own number. It says, hello, this is Paul. Sorry I missed your call. Leave a message, I'll call you back. I say, hey, buddy. That sermon was unbelievable today. You knocked it out of the park. It changed my life. I just wanted you to know that. You're the best. Gotta go. See you around. Bye. I'm not making this up. I leave myself voicemails. At the end of the night, I got about 10 of them, right? I, you know, hit the one play, and you know, some of them are discouraging. But there's one on there. I'm telling you, you have to learn to talk to yourself. None of us are exceptions from getting beat up by the power of discouragement. And we need encouragement. And therefore, we have to start with ourselves and give it. To pass it out. And it's amazing what happens when you do that. When you start speaking words of zest and zeal and enthusiasm and encouragement, you know what? Life gives back in kind. It is amazing the kind of people that will want to be around you. And you can't figure out in your life why you're surrounded by a bunch of negative, whining critics and all they do is rant, 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 rant. Do your own word audit. You start speaking words that lift up and you will surround yourself with people that want to give back in kind. Paul says our words matter. They matter. They are a gift from God, so use them wisely. And there is no ceiling on how good you can get at this skill. You understand that, right? If I want to change the life I have by changing my body, guess what? There's a cap on my body. There's only so much physical improvement I can do. There's a cap on my IQ. There's no cap on this. You can get as good and proficient at this skill as you want to. There is no ceiling on your capacity to build up the people around you. Our God is an encourager. And according to Paul, we're called to do the same, to trade up words that tear down for words that build up. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for encouraging us with the gift of grace. And likewise, Lord, when we go into the world and eliminate the unwholesome talk that begs to come out of our mouth and replace it with words that build up. In your son's name we pray. Amen.